Stu Does America.
Subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Get your Stu Does America merch as well at StuDoesMerch.com. The code STU10 will save you 10% off your order. Pat Gray is here with the latest on the Austin Metcalf murder, a really tragic story here in Texas. Andrew Cuomo has some trouble heading his way. I mean, it's not like, you know, he put you as an elderly person into a place where COVID was active. I mean, it's not like he did something like that. But he does have some trouble. And we'll take a look at the latest problems for Andrew Cuomo. But we're going to start by doing Earth Day 2025. Yes, we're here. Did you get your tree? Make sure you put your Earth Day tree up every single year. That means going out and cutting down a young tree that will soon die a painful death and then put it inside your home. Until you're done with it, then light it on fire. Not inside your home. I would take it out first, then light it on fire to help the environment, help it return to the environment. Anything you light on fire returns the environment and makes it whole. Always remember that. I will say, normally we get a lot of really scary headlines on Earth Day from the media, but today we've got one positive one. Here it is for you. This Earth Day, there are some reasons to be hopeful about the climate. Huh. The Washington Post says it's not all doom. Innovators are reimagining how we power our lives. Nature is pulling off surprising comebacks. Cities are cleaner and their air, cleaning their air, and nations are opening their wallets. Well, of course, obviously, spending money is the main way you can help the climate. It always is. If you ever want to help a climate organization, giving them cash is always the best thing you can do. But I love the nature is pulling off surprising comebacks. It's always surprising. We're always shocked when nature does something that doesn't like self-immolate. It's really a surprising situation. Now, of course, that's the positive news. There is some bad news. And if you know there's bad news, you know what is the cause of that bad news. Obviously, Donald Trump, right? Because you have the good news of the climate there, but you can't just take it like that. You got to understand that Donald Trump is doing everything he can to ruin the environment for you. Tariffs will raise prices, but the climate crisis is the real inflation risk. Ugh. The Trump administration has recently declared a war on climate change research inside the federal government and the wider U.S. research community, as well as doubling down on carbon-based business models. But wishing the problem away won't make it disappear. The real drivers of future inflation are not just tariffs, but the climate crisis and states backing off their decarbonization efforts. Yeah, the state is so effective in everything that it does. So if they honestly tried to add more carbon to the atmosphere, they probably would fail spectacularly and actually wind up getting rid of a bunch of it. So maybe they should just try reversing their goals because they can't do anything competently. Now, it's been a long time since Chevy Chase really was in anything that mattered or was competent. But his wife apparently has been doing something since the 1980s, not just Chevy Chase, but also being active with the climate. And she says, I fought for the climate since the 80s. All I've worked for is being undone. Doesn't that make you really, really sad? And, you know, you might say, wow, Janie Chase is really having problems. We're really sad about her feelings there. But she brought it home in this paragraph, I think. If you're thinking about the impact, what would it be like without all of her important climate work? Think about this. I turned to Chevy the other day and said, imagine if all your work just vanished. Fletch. Caddyshack. All four vacation movies. SNL. All of it gone. No legacy. No punchlines. No one left quipping, I'm Chevy Chase and you're not. It's hard not to let that ache sink in. I will say, climate activists have plenty of punchlines. In fact, let's feature some of them right now because it has been a period of failure for climate activists that is really, really fun and entertaining to watch. And that's why on Earth Day, we like to go back and look at some of their incredible predictions from the past. There's one great article AEI put out, 18 spectacularly wrong predictions were made around the first Earth Day in 1970. This is Mark J. Perry, by the way. And let me give you some highlights because these are always fun to go through. How many of them have come true? Maybe all of them have come true. That's what we're told, basically, by the media, that they've been predicting this correctly the entire time. Let's go back and look at the first Earth Day and the time around there to see what exactly came true. Harvard biologist George Wald estimated that civilization will end within 15 or 30 years. That would be by 1985 or 2000 for those keeping track at home, unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind. Now, we definitely did not take the action that they wanted us to take. And somehow, in both 1985 and 2000, we still have a civilization. Who would have seen it coming? How about this one? Population will inevitably and completely outstrip whatever small increases in food supplies we make, Paul Ehrlich confidently declared in the April 1970 issue of Mademoiselle. Imagine that, you're Mademoiselle. I don't know what normally is in there, like fashion, and you're getting like Paul Ehrlich telling you you're all going to die. The death rate will increase until at least 100 to 200 million people per year will be starving to death during the next 10 years by 1980. That did not occur, shockingly, by 1980. How about this? Most of the people who are going to die in the greatest cataclysm in the history of man have already been born, wrote Paul Ehrlich in the 1969 essay titled Eco-Catastrophe! Exclamation point. By 1975, some experts feel, I love that, some experts feel, not all experts have studies that prove, but some experts feel that food shortages will have escalated to the present level of world hunger and starvation into famines and unbelievable proportions. Other experts, more optimistic, think the ultimate food population collision will not occur until the decade of the 1980s. So there's your split. You have some people who say it's going to happen before 1980, and some that are say the biggest food cataclysm is going to happen in the 1980s. You might have noticed we got past both of those decades and none of that occurred. But there was never even a position. It wasn't like, look, we think there's a real chance that this could happen, but it also could be fine. That's never, it's either really terrible tragedy or slightly less terrible tragedy. That's it. So there you go. Next up, Paul Ehrlich again. He's kind of the star of this. He sketched out his most alarmist scenario of the 1970 Earth Day issue of The Progressive, assuring readers that between 1980 and 1989, some 4 billion people, including 65 million Americans, would perish in the great die-off. Now, you want to talk about a fun event to attend year after year after year, the great die-off. I don't remember 65 million people dying in the great die-off or 4 billion people worldwide. People do die of old age, but of course we've seen all those numbers go in the right direction, largely. It's already too late to avoid mass starvation, says Dennis Hayes, chief organizer of Earth Day in spring 1970. Is it too late to avoid mass starvation? Well, Peter Gunter, a North Texas State University professor, wrote in 1970, demographers agree almost unanimously on the following grim timetable. By 1975, widespread famines will begin in India. These will spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, and the Near East, Africa. By the year 2000, or conceivably sooner, South and Central America will exist under famine conditions. By the year 2000, 30 years from now, the entire world, with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia, will be in famine. Well, that entire world, that would include Antarctica, and no one lives there. Think about it. Because of the climate and hunger and stuff, nobody lives in Antarctica. Think about that. By the way, none of that happened. There wasn't widespread famines. The only famines that really happened in this period happened a little bit earlier with China and Mao. That happened. There have been famines, most of them human-caused, having nothing to do with the climate making it impossible to grow things. In January 1970, Life reported, scientists have solid experimental and theoretical evidence to support the following predictions. In a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. And by 1985, air pollution will be reduced to the half the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. Think about that for a second. Half the sunlight reaching the Earth, just gone. Now, I had this experience today where I went outside and it seemed pretty normal. Wasn't dark, wasn't half the sunlight. Just the normal amount of sunlight that's been every single day. What's fascinating about this is how often they say the same stuff, right? They're always predicting the worst cataclysms over and over and over again. And there's never like a punishment. There's never like a, gosh, we really blew that one. There's never a, I can't believe how embarrassed I am that I said those things. That never happens. No one ever follows up and asks them about this. Barry Commoner predicted that decaying organic pollutants would use up all of the oxygen in America's rivers, causing freshwater fish to suffocate. My understanding is fish have not all started to suffocate yet. They're just kind of still swimming around like normal. Paul Ehrlich again chimed in, predicting in 1970 that air pollution is certainly going to take hundreds of thousands of lives in the next few years alone. Ehrlich sketched a scenario in which 200,000 Americans would die in 1973 during smog disasters in New York and Los Angeles. Don't remember those. Do you remember the smog disasters? Now, it's been a little foggy there, a little smoggy at times. The traffic kind of sucks. The people can be really annoying at times in Los Angeles, but I don't remember any smog disasters killing 200,000 of them. Maybe that's just me. Paul Ehrlich warned in the May 1970 issue of Autobahn that DDT and other chlorinated hydrocarbons may have substantially reduced the life expectancy of people born since 1945. Ehrlich warned that Americans born since 1946 now had a life expectancy of only 49 years. And he predicted that if current patterns continued, life expectancy would reach 42 years by 1980 when it might level out. One thing you always get from these quotes and articles from environmentalists is a phrase that you'll hear over and over and over again, and you can never actually take seriously, which is, if current patterns continue, because that never seems to happen. The current patterns don't continue. It's almost like the Earth isn't trying to commit suicide all the time. But they say at life expectancy is 42 years, which is, wow, I'm impressive because I'm already 40. What's today's date? We're 2025, 49. I'm 49. I've already lived out past my life expectancy because it evened out at 42, if you remember correctly. Ecologist Kenneth Watt declared, by the year 2000, if present trends continue, we will be using up crude oil at such a rate that there won't be any more crude oil. You'll drive up to the pump and say, fill her up, buddy. And he'll say, I'm very sorry, there isn't any. Now, we have had some supply chain disruptions, and we have had a bunch of environmentalists trying to make it so we can't drill our own oil, so that we can't have any gasoline. But generally speaking, that's been the only real threat on that one. Harrison Brown, a scientist at the National Academy of Sciences, published a chart in Scientific American that looked at metal reserves and estimated that humanity would totally run out of copper shortly after 2000. Lead, zinc, tin, gold, and silver would be gone before 1990. It's weird. All those things still exist. In fact, I could still get zinc at CVS for like 9,000 tablets for $4. Lead, tin, gold all still exist. Copper still exists. Silver also still exists. That's your update. Senator Gaylord Nelson wrote in Look, Dr. S. Dylan Ripley, Secretary of the Smithsonian Institute, believes that in 25 years, somewhere between 75 and 80% of all the species of living animals will be extinct. Well, Dr. S. Dylan Ripley might believe that, but he is wrong. Is he still alive? Does anyone know? Is S. Dylan Ripley still alive? If so, maybe he'll come on the show and try to answer whether 75 and 80% of all the species have gone extinct yet. I feel like we still have a lot of them. Kenneth Watt also warned about a pending ice age in a speech. The world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years, he declared. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice as what it would take to put us into an ice age. And over and over and over and on and on and on and on and on. There's no shortage of these things. They predicted this constantly, and that was kind of the first Earth Day pitch. The first Earth Day pitch was not about global warming. In fact, they were praying for global warming, praying to probably some god that doesn't exist, but they were praying nonetheless. They were saying, oh, yes, please bring us global warming because we are going into a period of another ice age. The pitch at the time was global cooling. That was the issue. That was the thing you're supposed to be concerned about, global cooling. And that just switched over time, and no one seemed to matter, no one seemed to notice, no one seemed to care that they were telling us one thing a little while ago and now are telling us the exact opposite. Now they're saying global warming is the concern. And I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be all that surprised considering how Earth Day began. This is back again in 1970. The Earth Day co-founder actually killed and composted his girlfriend. Ira Einhorn was on stage hosting the first Earth Day event at the Paramount Park in Philadelphia, April 22nd, 1970. 7 years later, police raided his closet and found the composted body of his ex-girlfriend inside a trunk. Here's the quote. Investigators searched Ira Einhorn's apartment after one of his neighbors complained that a reddish-brown, foul-smelling liquid, was leaking from the ceiling directly below Einhorn's bedroom closet. Inside the closet, police found Einhorn's girlfriend, Helen Maddox's beaten and partially mummified body stuffed into a trunk that had also been packed with styrofoam, air fresheners, and newspapers. I mean, at the very least, it's nice that he kept the air fresh. That's, of course, a positive. And he was keeping up on the daily headlines while he was composting his girlfriend. And I think we can all look back at that with some real admiration. So this event was started by a person who was a murderer and not a good guy in any way. It was filled with so many lies that they had to switch from global cooling to global warming in the interim to try to keep it convincing. And the fact that we've now had about 1 degree of warming over a century is not something I'm all that worked up about. And frankly, I think we can do a lot better job focusing on the things we can control. We can control, for example, our energy resources. We can make sure that we have the energy that we need to condition homes and their air. It's called air conditioning. And when you have it, you're able to keep the temperature kind of at whatever you want. That's kind of the great thing about American life and the civilization that we've built here, that you no longer have to worry about being outside when it's 115 degrees or 12 degrees. You get to either heat or cool your home. You get to drive to places that you want to go. You get to move around on airplanes. You get to take vacations to places that you want to visit. All these things are some of the charm of human life, right? And of course, what do you get from the Earth Day fanatics? That you're not supposed to do any of them. That's one of the strangest things about all of this. Environmentalists are always trying to tell us, hey, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't have your big screen TV, you can't go on fun trips, you can't enjoy life. That's never going to work with the American people. The American people want to enjoy their life. We've worked really hard to build a country that gives us those opportunities. And, you know, frankly, number one, I don't feel all that bad about it. I feel good about it. That's number one. Number two, it's important for us to kind of revisit these things and remember how wrong these people are so we don't listen to them again. The same people, a lot of these people still have jobs, are still working in the academic field, still publishing data that we're supposed to look at and care about. Well, I don't care about what Paul Ehrlich says. I don't care what these people say anymore. You have a situation where the American people are worried about the economy. They're worried about the culture. They're worried about the border. There's a lot to worry about in this country. Worrying about a 1 degree temperature rise over a century seems to me to be a tad misguided at this point. I want to get into this and so much more with Pat Gray. He joins us next. Have you checked out the latest housing news? It turns out that selling a home in 2025 is officially about as enjoyable as filing your taxes. Who saw that coming? Buying or selling a home is not just stressful, it is one of the biggest financial moves you will ever make. And the last thing that you need is an agent who spends more time posting selfies than actually selling houses. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com fixes this problem for you. They can connect you with the best agents in your town. And these are professionals who genuinely know how to navigate today's unpredictable housing market. They're leaders, they're closers, and yeah, they're trustworthy. Essentially, they're the complete opposite of whoever's writing today's news headlines. If you are buying or you're selling or you're even doing both at the same time, which oftentimes you are, save yourself some trouble and get an agent who knows what they're doing. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all. This is a free service to you, by the way. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
I'm joined once again by Pat Gray. He's the host of Pat Gray Unleashed. Who would have guessed that? When you hear the name of the show, how would you know who the host was?
You wouldn't.
You'd have no idea. But that's who it is. It's Pat Gray. He's right here on Blaze TV. He's also the purveyor of delicious Keksi cookies, which you can get at keksi.com, K-E-K-S-I.com. I did mention this on radio, but I will reiterate that my son, who is a carrot cake fiend, loves the carrot cake. Anytime he can get carrot cake, had one of the carrot cake cookies, which I guess are available still at keksi.com.
Yes, they are.
Loved it.
I love that.
Loved it.
I love that he loved it.
Yeah.
I really do. And it's good for you.
It is
a cookie that's actually good for you. It's got carrot pieces in it.
Well, yes, right? It does, but I don't.
So, yeah, it's actually good for you.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. There's also a really good one that's coming out, I think, for Mother's Day, or maybe maybe it's Father's Day. It's a peanut butter, and of course you can't have it because it's got marshmallow in it.
Oh,
but it's marshmallow cookies all through it. That's actually good for you as well.
Really? Yeah. That one. Now the carrot one, there was at least an argument. I don't see how.
No, the marshmallow is really good for you. You won't eat it, but yeah. I understand that there are scientists in Norway who say marshmallow builds bodies 10 different ways.
Really?
Like Wonder Bread used to. But now marshmallow.
Now it's marshmallow based.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say peanut butter. A lot of places say you should have peanut butter for
health
or something.
Yeah. You get
I've had the peanut butter cookies from Kexi. They don't seem like necessarily the central point of a diet.
Right. And I don't know if you want to make it the central part of your diet.
Yeah.
But
just three or four a day. You don't want to do more than three or four full cookies a day.
No. Right.
I mean, unless it's a special occasion. Then you can go with more.
Yeah, like a Thursday or something.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be fine. Mm-hmm. But definitely not more than that on a normal day. Yeah. I would love to talk about cookies this entire conversation, but we need to get to something very important.
Okay.
This Maryland father who was abducted from his home.
Right.
Where he was in a wonderful relationship with his wife. He was sent
She adores him.
She adores him.
And he her.
And he heard. They have three children, Pat.
Yeah. He's and they're handicapped. They're handicapped.
Yeah, and that's right. And you know, the left cares so much about the sanctity of fatherhood.
Yeah.
They've been, you know, they've been so key in maintaining that relationship between fathers and that nuclear family. That's what they care about.
They really do.
And here we have the Trump administration breaking up a family unit.
Despicable.
Dividing a family.
Despicable.
To send him to El Salvador because he had a tattoo on his finger or something? I mean, this is shocking. That's my understanding of the story.
Shocking.
Is that the right way to think of it?
Yes, it is the right way to put it. And I understand he also ran an orphanage.
He did.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
He ran an orphanage. And he cooked meals for one-legged homeless veterans in the afternoon.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And he was torn away from all of that.
I mean, this is really how it's presented.
You know, and I had concerns about it. I'm not a left-wing kook. I did have concerns about because they said they made a mistake in the beginning.
Right, well, and they did. They still say they made a mistake in sending him to the El Salvador prison because that was the one place they weren't supposed to send him, I guess.
Right.
And somewhere else in the world would have been fine.
Would have been
fine. They weren't supposed to send him there because of a previous court ruling.
And I wanted him deported, too. If you're here illegally, you need to be deported.
Yep.
I'm all about that. But, you know, if there's a problem, let's fix the problem and then let's deport him. But, you know, there's been so much that's come out since. I was hoping for more information to come out on this guy. More information has come out on him. Mm-hmm. You know, the restraining order that his wife took out on him and all of that.
The domestic violence.
Yeah.
Right? It was based on domestic violence, allegedly.
Yeah. And she wouldn't even answer the question when she was asked about it. Her answer was, when she was asked point blank if she was afraid of him, she said, "Well, he's alive, and that's all I can say." That's alive?
It's a weird response.
It's a weird response. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I've kind of lost my sympathy for him, and kind of okay that he's... I mean, I don't know that you go directly to CECOT, but...
Right.
I guess that's up to El Salvador, right?
I guess it is. Mm-hmm. And the question, I guess, and I think I'm stating this correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, but like your concern at the beginning, which is a concern that I would share as well, is do we know for a fact he was actually in MS-13? Do we know, is there enough evidence that he was in these groups? Now, I think since the initial reporting, I've seen some stuff that doesn't really convince me of that. But overall, I think I would lean that he was, right?
Yeah, like it that's does. Where I'm leaning now.
We have a source, a confidential source, who said he was in MS-13. He was arrested with multiple members of MS-13. How many times has that happened to you, Pat, when you were hanging?
Oh, man. Well, when I go to Home Depot, a lot of times I'll be arrested with a group of guys, and some of them occasionally are MS-13 members.
Okay. You know, it does happen.
It does.
It could be a coincidence.
There was one time where there was a few MS-13 and a few Bloods and Crips.
Okay.
And I was arrested with those guys.
Right.
But
sometimes it's Tren de Aragua.
Yes, every once in a while.
That's a lot. I mean, it's
a lot. There's a lot going on there.
You, there's not a conversation here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not a conversation here as to whether he's going to come back and live in the United States. Like, even if they did, and I look, we could obviously pressure El Salvador and make them send him back.
Yes.
There's no question we could do that if we really yes. wanted to. We don't want to. But even if he did come back, we would just immediately send him somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I think so. But it does seem like the left wants him to come back, and they want him to live in Maryland with his wife, I guess, because they don't care about women anymore.
No.
So let's not protect her either.
His wife is probably terrorized by this possibility.
Probably.
Secretly, but can't really say that.
I mean, I haven't seen a lot from her other than he's alive, and that's all she can say. That's about all I've seen her say on this thing. And you would think if she was really upset about it, she'd be on a lot. And I know MSNBC and CNN would have her on. So I don't know.
But if he is a gang member, she'd be terrified by coming out and speaking out and saying, yes, I'm glad
that's
he's gone.
True.
So we don't really know the truth there. Let me go to another one, because this is the left has this tendency. We talked a little bit about it on radio today, but I think it's somewhat new in that they used to select really sympathetic characters for their causes. Like, if you're going to go to illegal immigrants, you're going to find the most sympathetic illegal immigrant, someone who's got trouble at home and is a mom and has children and is an upstanding citizen, works at the church or whatever. They'd always find the most sympathetic person.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have abandoned that.
Yeah.
This guy who's in a gang and potentially MS-13 beat his wife. He's now the hero of the left. And then there's Carmelo Anthony, not the basketball player,
man. But
Carmelo Anthony, the track athlete, apparently here in the Texas area, in Frisco, right? It was Frisco, mm-hmm. Texas, which is a nearby suburb, a nice suburb of Dallas. He went to a track meet. He had some sort of confrontation, which seemed to be very minor, about whether he should leave a tent.
Yeah.
And then decided to stab a person in the heart, a kid, and kill him.
Right.
He's now the new sympathetic character on the left.
Yeah. I don't know how they've taken up his cause now, but right away, he became the victim there somehow.
How?
It's inconceivable to me. I don't understand it. Because, you know, I guess because he's black, and the victim in this case is white, so they've just switched the victim to the black guy, and the perpetrator's the white guy? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
And, you know, even he asked the police as he was being arrested if it would qualify as self-defense, because he was asked to leave, I guess. And he apparently said, touch me and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I think, according to witnesses, Austin Metcalf, who was the white kid that got stabbed, did in fact touch him, didn't hit him, wasn't violent, but like touched him on the shoulder or his backpack or something. And then he saw what happened. He got stabbed in the heart for it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely unbelievable. It's perplexing that this would happen. What do you make of this spokesperson for Carmelo Anthony's family?
He's like a felon baby Al Sharpton, kind of.
Yeah, because he has some criminal history, right?
Yeah, he does. And he's got an unsavory past. And what's interesting about what he did at this press conference was that Austin Metcalf's father showed up at the press conference, and they decided he wasn't supposed to be there, and so they told him to leave, which is the exact scenario that his son was in that tent where they asked him to leave. Mm-hmm. And he saw fit to stab somebody over it. But he did leave. There was no violence there. Austin Metcalf's father doesn't seem like he's even trying to create any sort of division. In fact, in the very beginning, he said that you shouldn't make this a racial issue. It's not about that. And he forgave the kid immediately. And now this spokesperson they have is trying to make it a racial issue. And he's trying to make
the only place they can go, though, to be fair. Like,
yeah.
There's no, it's not like they have a defense on, hey, well, actually, his life was in danger, and that's why he did this.
Yeah.
This is just straight out, like, if we get MSNBC upset that it's racism, maybe we can get out of this.
Right.
So that doesn't seem to be flying with most people in Texas. And the other thing, so they're trying now to blame it on the school system because they held the track meet despite the rain that day.
The rain.
They held a track meet in the rain.
Why would that?
The track meet shouldn't have happened. And if the track meet wouldn't have happened, the stabbing wouldn't have occurred.
I guess that is true.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a great defense.
Isn't it, though? It really is. Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's not always race as well. It's also with the United Healthcare murder. The same thing. Like, I don't know, because they think he's good looking.
Yeah.
They think there's some argument here that maybe you should be able to kill healthcare CEOs because they denied a claim once. I don't know what. They are not taking the most, the best examples anymore of their causes. They've gone this other way of like, hey, here are horrible examples. It's almost like that idea of, you know, that quote attributed to Hitler of like the bigger the lie. It's like the worse the person, like the more it's going to challenge you, that would show that you're a true believer.
Yeah.
If you back us on this, you'll back us on anything.
Yeah. And according to reports that I've heard, there wasn't even really a problem with the coverage.
Yeah.
That this guy had. No. It wasn't even about that. It was just that he was a UHC CEO.
It was a generalized complaint about healthcare that he couldn't even articulate in his own manifesto.
Incredible.
Just awful. That was really depressing. Let's talk about cookies a little bit before we go. Where do people go to get the cookies?
They can go to keksi.com, mm-hmm. KEKSI.com.
So the world feels like it's falling apart, mm-hmm. but then you eat a good cookie.
And then everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Check it out, keksi.com. Of course, Pat Gray, host of Blaze TV's Pat Gray Unleashed. Be sure to pick up some Keksi cookies as well this week, leading into Father's Day and Mother's Day. Some new varieties out there, so check them out. Pat, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Dow Jones headed for the worst April since 1932 as investors send no confidence signal. Now, I did believe it bounced back. I checked earlier, at least on today. I think it bounced back a little bit today. So that's positive news. Though you'd rather avoid headlines about how you're the worst since 1932 if you can deal with it. It's hard to know at this point because we just don't know what the policies are going to be going forward. You know, I think we're kind of in an uncertain area right now. So, you know, like I've talked to people who are like, well, what should I do with my investments? I don't freaking know. You know, like it doesn't seem like a great time for investments, but we may see that turn around really by a flip of a switch at any point. President Trump did something with tariffs where he took off all these high rates on a lot of these countries around the world. And that seemed to do a heck of a good job jump-starting the economy again. We've kind of been up and down since then, a little bit up today. Hopefully that continues. RFK Jr.'s autism study is on the way. He's going to amass the medical records of many Americans. The NIH is amassing private medical records from a number of federal and commercial databases to give HHS RFK Jr.'s new effort to study autism a boost. New data will allow external researchers, picks for Kennedy's autism studies, to study comprehensive patient data with broad coverage. I mean, look, believe what you want to believe on autism. I mean, it's up to you, really. At this point, I think people are kind of like set in their ways. There's very few people who have an opinion on this matter that don't hold it pretty strongly. So I just don't see a lot of people switching no matter what RFK Jr. says. People are going to believe it or they're not. The one thing that I just can't take here, though, is this audition of this process for RFK Jr. as this like open-ended, who knows how it will turn out process. Look, RFK Jr. has spent his entire life telling everybody what the cause of autism is. That's been his gig his entire life. And now we're supposed to believe he's just going in this with this open-minded and he's just, who knows? It could come out with just this nothing. Who knows? It's kind of a silly thing that everyone's kind of pretending at this point. I'm going to look everywhere. I'm sure you will. But what you're going to find is the thing that you found for the last 30 years, whatever that is. It's like me going on a fact-finding mission to find out who the greatest football team is. Obviously, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not going to be a surprise that when I tell you that. And I can tell you how open-minded I am. I will be considering the Cincinnati Bengals. No, I won't. Okay, that's just not the way it works. Now, it is Earth Day. We should at least go on and figure out what Al Gore is up to. You're going to be shocked to hear this. Al Gore is comparing Trump to Nazis. Yes, Al Gore compares Trump administration to Nazi Germany. You think that this, after trying this in 2024 and watching it blow up in their faces, they wouldn't go back to it. But he He says, I understand very well why it is wrong to compare Adolf Hitler's Third Reich to any other movement. And then, of course, he went on to do that. He says it was uniquely evil, full stop. I get it. But there are important lessons from history that that emergent evil. He went on to say, of course, Trump was showing many of those things and characteristics. This is just what they do on the left, right? It's not just him. Of course, Larry David also mocking Bill Maher's meeting with Donald Trump as my dinner with Adolf. He wrote a satire piece in the New York Times, which, again, I don't remember seeing a lot of satire pieces, but I guess Larry David is famous enough. He gets to do whatever he wants. He came out and said, he basically said, he parodied Bill Maher. And honestly, the more interesting part here is the battle on the left between Bill Maher and Larry David. Like, you have two left-wing comedians who are just going at each other. Because this is really less about, honestly, Donald Trump and calling him Hitler, which of course it does do. But that's just standard, it's basically the only thing you can do, right, on the left is to call Donald Trump Adolf Hitler. But it's really more of an attack on Bill Maher, who said, hey, actually, I found Donald Trump to be likable. And I think he's kind of like, in reality, a nice guy. And in his public persona is the thing that I don't like. But I don't even think that's real. That's kind of was his take on that. They didn't agree on a lot of things, but he still had dinner with him. Larry David's essay was basically directly mocking that. How can you say that after you're talking and sitting down for dinner with Adolf Hitler? So that's where we are. And Chris Matthews is still alive. He's talking to Jim Acosta, who is still also alive, doing some sort of podcast, I guess. Or it really comes off more as a Zoom call, a really bad Zoom call, as they talk over each other most of the time. But here is Chris Matthews' take on why you should call Adolf Hitler, Donald Trump, and basically say that they're the same person. Watch.
The OJ trial all day.
That's right.
It's
so true. And it just dominated our lives. I remember that. But the other, one thing that every taxi driver will talk about these days is Donald Trump. And I have to ask you some newsy questions before we spend the entire time together reminiscing.
I got a nasty one for you.
Okay, well, good. I'm just wondering.
What did Hitler do in the Holocaust? He took people from Germany to other countries.
Yeah.
Where there was no German law.
Yeah.
There was not even a pretense of German law. They took them to Poland or, you're hungry or whatever, and they killed them.
And so when you see what's happening right now with this El Salvadoran gulag, I mean, the CICOT gulag.
Gulag. It's the same as the gulags.
He's basically taking a page out of that playbook, you think?
Well, but gets them out of the country. And he gets this president of El Salvador to say, now, if I were at CNN or MSNBC, and I was in that Oval Office, I would have asked two questions. This is not original. First question to the president of Salvador. If President Trump asked you to send this guy Garcia back to the United States, would you do it? Then I'd go to President, and I'd go to Trump. Next question, Mr. President Trump, will you ask him to send him back?
All right, that's enough on Chris Matthews. I can't take more anymore. Let's just ban him for the next year or two. I don't want to hear another comment from Chris Matthews. It's so ridiculous. Everything's Adolf Hitler. I love the, what did Hitler do during the Holocaust? He moved people out of his country. There are actually other things he did that were really more notable. He wound up murdering 6 million Jews, for example. That's kind of the reason why we know the period. If what he did was take suspected gang members and send a couple of them across the border, what they themselves called a mistake, I don't think we'd look back at Adolf Hitler the same way. I don't think the name would carry as much weight as it does if it weren't for, the millions of murders that went along with it. That was kind of the big thing when it came to Adolf Hitler. So there are some pretty distinct differences there between Trump and Hitler. It's just amazing that you can do this because forever it was off limits to compare anything to the Holocaust. Glenn would come out and he would compare Hamas to the Nazis, and he would get people would get angry from the ADL, and they would yell at him and say, "How dare you? It minimizes the real Holocaust and all this." Now you just come out and call Donald Trump Hitler every single day. I don't know if they're just overwhelmed and they just can't keep up with all the Hitler accusations, but I don't seem to hear much from them. Although we did hear this from them: anti-Semitic incidents, partly fueled by campus protests, reach record-breaking highs in 2024, according to the ADL. So once again, we've been warned forever of the anti-Semitism on the right, but when it comes down to it, when we're getting to record-setting levels, where are we getting from? Of course, the college left. to introduce a brand new segment here on the program, which is called, Wait, It Wasn't Already? Really? Because it seems like I get a lot of stories like this. Let me give you an example of this. Chipotle is going to expand to Mexico amid Trump trade war with U.S. neighbor. Now, I will say the Trump trade war has literally nothing to do with the story whatsoever. Like, this is the typical way they do this in the news, where they just insert Trump. It's got nothing to do with the story whatsoever. What is fascinating is, and why it's in the Wait, It Wasn't Already segment of the program, is the name of the restaurant is Chipotle Mexican Grill. They're getting their first location in Mexico. Wait, it wasn't there already? Like, this is a new thing that Chipotle is going to be in Mexico? Apparently not all that authentic. Now, I will say Chipotle, which I enjoy Chipotle. I got no problems with Chipotle. Not the least expensive food in the world, though. The fact that this tariff war is going on when you're going to be importing into Mexico all of the wonderful, delicious Mexican American rice and beans is really, I'm sure, going to really knock that price up even higher. So get ready for that. Another example of, wait, it wasn't already? Comes to us from Hollywood. A new Oscars rule: if you don't see all of the nominated films, you can't vote. Wait, that wasn't already a rule? Like, is that serious? That's really, apparently this has not been a rule. You actually were able, at least in the past, to be able to vote on the best picture and best supporting actress and best actor without actually watching the movies that you're voting on. Now, that to me seems like a suboptimal plan. It seems like it should have been a rule a long time ago. Now, I guess this was a rule for foreign films, oddly. Like, if you were looking at a foreign film, you had to make sure that you watched it all. But for domestic films, we're like, it's all slop anyway. Don't worry about it. Just, this is whatever. Just shovel on any opinion that you want. So now, because there was a controversy for a while where they would send up these screeners for movies, and they would see the voters watching like 20 minutes of them and turning them off because they could tell how much of the movie they watched. They weren't even watching them. Now they're saying, okay, you got to at least watch the movies. I mean, I know I'm asking a lot here. So there's going to be like 4 votes for each Oscar now. I mean, this is, I think, really going to upend this entire process, because they might say they're watching the movies, but we know they're not going to watch the movies. I kind of thought that's what it would have been like in the past, right? Where they would have this sort of honor system and people probably didn't really pay attention, but you were expected to actually watch the movies. No, in the past, apparently, you didn't even have to watch them. But that's our Wait, It Wasn't Already segment of the day, because I kind of thought that one would have already been a rule. Apparently not. And all of the Oscar nominations and awards you've watched over the years really meant even less than you thought before. Well, we cover it often. The media kind of just makes up their own news, honestly, at this point. They also seem to stick to one version about the January 6th story without all the details. I mean, look, we all saw what happened that day, but there's so much more that we haven't seen. And I think it's interesting to look at that. Blaze TV just released their final episode covering January 6th, and the findings are definitely worth your attention. They've uncovered new Capitol surveillance footage, conflicting timelines, and important questions surrounding the story of Officer Harry Dunn and his account. I'm not here to tell you what to think, but I do think that you deserve access to all the information, and it is now streaming exclusively on Blaze TV. I actually watched this earlier today, and you know, it's not one of those things where, like, there's no excuses made for the bad things that went on January 6th, but what it is a real investigation into looking at this footage and saying that what Harry Dunn said about his day seems to completely not be true. I mean, we have the footage, we have the timelines, we can put it in full perspective. You can head over to blazetv.com/J6 and see it for yourself. Take a moment today to check it out. It's blazetv.com/J6.